مسلم بياني.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning. Good morning to colleagues and friends and friends.
Mr. Malamatye.
Thank you. And morning to everyone. I'm present.
Mr. Benson Namashe.
Molo Salo Namalo, the court.
Ms. Muatshe.
Morning, Chairperson, and morning, colleagues. I'm present.
Ms. Yaku.
Morning, Chair. Morning, everyone. I'm present.
Mr. Mulder.
Goeiemôre, voorzitter en collega's. Ek is aanwezig.
Ms. Mutahum.
Morning, Chair. Morning, everyone. I'm present.
Mr. Cuthbert.
Morning, Chair.
Mr. Kring.
Morning, Chair. Morning, colleagues.
Chair, these are the members on the platform, Chair. We have only one member, but Mr. Mehmet may have some connectivity problems and may join us, Chair, later. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Can we fly to the agenda, please? Thank you, members. Here we have the agenda for today. Opening and welcome, apologies, adoption of the agenda, briefing by the DTIC on the Public Protector's Report on the conversion of the Toyota Quantum panel vans. Then we have a consideration of the first draft report on the second and third quarter financial and non-financial performance, and then a presentation on a draft oversight concept document, and then closing remarks at 12. Can I then go up, please, Margot? Right. Good morning to everyone on the platform, and you are very welcome to this meeting. Can I have apologies from the Secretariat?
Apologies, Chair. There is no apologies. Mr. McPherson is still joining us. I know we had connectivity problems yesterday, Chair. And if there is an apology forthcoming, I will inform the committee, Chair. Thanks.
That's fine. So can we call on members to propose adoption of the agenda as tabled? Honourable Mbuyani.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I rise to propose that we adopt the agenda as tabled. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable Motaung.
Thanks, Chair. I second the adoption of the agenda.
Thank you. Our agenda is duly adopted. So the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry is required to consider the report on the Public Protector Report number 37 of 2018-19 on a systemic investigation into allegations of illegal conversion of goods carrying Toyota Quantum panel vans into passenger carrying minibus taxis to transport members of the public for reward. In doing so, the committee should report on the remedial action identified by the Public Protector in relation to the Minister of Trade and Industry as captured in the report. Therefore, the purpose of our meeting today is to receive a briefing from the DTIC focusing specifically on the remedial action addressed to the Minister of Trade and Industry as captured in the Public Protector's report. We know that we have met previously and we received a comprehensive report, but for the purpose of this meeting, we want to focus specifically on the remedial action so that we can process a report as the Portfolio Committee of Trade and Industry. So from who's on the platform, Mr. Hermans from the department?
The department is led by the acting DG, Ms. Mabisha Thompson, Chair, and we have also the CEO of the NRCS and Ms. Joan Scott of SABS is also on the platform, Chair. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Over to you to introduce your team and speak to the purpose of our meeting, Acting DG.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning to the members as well. As Chair, you've indicated that we are here on that matter of the conversion. I am with my colleagues, Stephen Hannibal, who's currently the acting DG in our branch of the department that oversees the work of both SABS and NRCS. We also have Chenge Dimana, who's also the chief director responsible for our technical infrastructure institutions, of which SABS and NRCS is a part of. We've got on the platform the CEO of the NRCS, Mr. Mamadise, and we also have Jody Scholes, who is one of our administrators at SABS, and of course Solu, who ordinarily would help us when we are present in this meetings. The way that the presentations are structured would be such that both SABS and the NRCS would talk a lot more in detail about the work that they have been engaged in order to take the remedial actions that the public protector has found forward to implement that. Of course, within a very limited capacity that is dictated to by their different mandates. And then what Stephen would do, Stephen Hannibal, he would just maybe introduce the presentation together with Chenge. So with your permission, Chair, we are ready to then just take through the committee and the work that has been done. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Acting DG, and kudos to you for your eye and the African earrings. It looks awesome. Thank you. So it's over to Mr. Hannibal.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, and all of the Honourable Members, DG and colleagues on the platform. Thanks very much, Chair. As DG indicated, we have a presentation, a relatively brief presentation that that we'd like to share with the committee. We were here a few weeks back providing a quite detailed presentation on how the department as well as SABS and NRCS have responded to the public protector's findings. Chair, if you'll allow, I want to propose that we allow Dr. Dimana to take the committee through the first part of the presentation, which is providing a bit of context to the remedial action. And then if you'll allow the CEO of NRCS to just indicate some of the additional interventions that they've implemented, which talk not so much only to the remedial action, which is what is directed to the entities to implement, but also to some of the findings where the NRCS is going beyond the remedial action that the public protector has directed the three entities to take. So Chair, if you'll allow, I want to propose that we hand over to Dr. Dimana to take the committee through the first part, and then to Mr. Mamadise to take the committee through the specific additional actions that the NRCS has taken. Thanks, Chair.
you very much, Mr. Hannibal. Dr. Timana. Dr. Dimana, I think you must unmute. Is he on the platform? Yes, he is. Okay, there we go. We can see you, but you're muted. And yet your mic is on. I'm not sure why we can't hear you. Can I just check with other members, is it my connectivity or is it from Dr. Dimana's side, Ms. Thurman?
No, it's from Dr. Dimana's side, Chair. We can hear you clearly, Chair.
Dr. Dimana?
Chair, perhaps Dr. Dimana can disconnect and reconnect. If it's okay with you, Chair, I can start the presentation if Tolo or Margo is able to slide it. I can talk to the slides.
Okay, can we check? Ms. Sheldon, do you have the presentation? Because I don't see Ms. Mushi. Okay, here we go. If we can just get it into slide mode and then you can proceed. I think Dr. Dimana must just indicate to us when he's sorted. Thank you. Over to you, Ms. Hannibal.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. The Director General has already indicated the delegation. So if you move to the next slide. Sheldon. Yes. Honourable members, we noted that in the last meeting there were a number of concerns raised around abbreviations and acronyms, and so we have tried to provide a detailed slide indicating what all of those acronyms are. That's on the previous slide, and then on this slide, honourable members, we're just reminding the committee. Of the remedial action that the public protector has directed the department and its entities to take. And members will recall that the minister was directed to take urgent and appropriate steps to harness and foster good, effective and efficient working relations. And I think it is important to note, honourable members, that there were no specific adverse findings made against the department, but there were a number of findings against the SAVs and the NRCS. And the DTIC, after discussion with both entities, chose not to challenge the public protector's report because we felt that the remedial action was appropriate and was in line with good governance and good institutional practice. But there were a number of elements of the public protector's report and the findings of the public protector that perhaps talk to some misunderstandings and areas of misalignment regarding the role and the mandate of SAVs and the NRCS. And so we'll talk to that in later slides, just to highlight how perhaps there is a need for slightly better coordination amongst all of the departments, both DTIC and the Department of Transport and the entities, both of DTIC, such as SAVs and NRCS, and the entities that report to the Department of Transport to work together and to perhaps make sure that there are no gaps in the regulatory oversight. So, Ms. Sheldon, if you could move to the next slide, please. So in terms of the remedial action, what we've done to ensure that we fully comply with the remedial action is that the DTIC has facilitated a quite detailed memorandum of understanding between NRCS and SAVs. That was concluded in 2021 and it's now been fully implemented. The MOU formalizes areas of cooperation and collaboration, but it also indicates how the MOU will be implemented in practice. So a joint working committee has been established, and that's meeting regularly. There's also implementation of mutually agreed programs and projects, and there are regular management meetings to deal with operational matters that link NRCS and SABS. And so we would really suggest to the committee that the remedial action has been quite extensively implemented. It's also important to note that the MOU strengthened the cooperation that is already entrenched in the primary legislation of the two entities. And so it's formalized that and operationalized that to a significant degree. But there is very strong cooperation between the two entities that is really embodied in the primary legislation of those two entities. If we could move to the next slide, please. Chairperson, as I indicated, in addition to the remedial action, the NRCS has also gone beyond that and responded to some of the specific findings that the public protector made. And so there are a number of slides now that cover what the NRCS is doing over and above the remedial action. And so if you'll allow, Chair, I'd like to propose handing over to the CEO of the NRCS, Mr. Mamadise, for him to take the committee through the next few slides.
Thank you very much. CEO Mamadise.
Hi, good morning, Chair. Good morning, honorable members, as well as the acting DG and the colleagues. In terms of the specific actions and additional actions that NRCS has undertaken, NRCS established a task team, a dedicated task team of inspectors who would specifically look into the issues of the MIBs, specifically dealing with the issues of vehicle conventions by the MIBs. In addition to that, Chair, we have concluded an SLA with Department of Transport. It came into effect on 1 April 2021. The SLA essentially defines the roles of each entity, in particular based on the fact that NRCS supports the Department of Transport, and which is the policy owner on all vehicle regulations, and to signify the fact that we have also been appointed as the inspectorate for MIBs, and define our work in relation to that. It is also important to note, Chair, that the PP did not make a specific recommendations for NRCS or remedial action in relation to the NRCS. However, NRCS has proceeded to identify the findings that the PP has on in relation to the NRCS, and we proceeded to address those gaps. If you can move to the next slide. As Stephen has already stated, we have an MOU with SAPS. The aim of the MOU is to address the finding of the public protector and help us to foster relationships with SABS. We are already joined on the hip, as Stephen has stated, by the legislation, because whenever we develop compulsory specification, the legislation implies that we must refer to the standards that SABS administer. So, but the MOU is in relation to operational and strategic matters that each entity is focusing on. Under the MOU, we have joined committees on standards and testing, which were the issues that the PP raised in relation to the conversion of panel vans, wherein they're finding related to the testing requirements and so forth. So we have this task team to look into the issues of testing, the quality of testing, and the turnaround times in terms of the testing by SABS. We do have STEERCOM meetings, which is chaired rotationally by myself and the acting CEO of SAPS. We strive to have those meetings on quarterly basis when times allows. One of the issues that was raised by the PP again was the issue of a letter of authorization from original vehicle manufacturer. We have incorporated that requirement into our processes going forward. So no one will be able to convert a vehicle without the support documents or a letter of support from original vehicle manufacturer. So in other ways, if one wants to convert a Nissan panel van into an ambulance or into a taxi, the NRCS will not do any work until they supply us with the support documents from Nissan that indeed they have agreed to the vehicle being converted into something else. If you can move to the next slide. The public protector also highlighted the issue of the vehicles that have been identified and the NRCS failing. If you can mute, the 1,986 vehicles that have been identified, as we have indicated, we support the Department of Transport, which is a policy owner. Our work entails inspecting the MIBs, using the legislative muscle that we have in terms of the NRCS Act, Section 17. However, what we cannot do is to inspect vehicles that are on the road because we don't have those powers. However, we have recommended to the DOT to admin mark those vehicles so that they can be removed on the road. We don't know as of now whether those vehicles are still operating as taxis on the road, because only the DOT and its agencies will have access to the information as to who is the owner. And in addition to that, the vehicles are required to register each year to renew the license disc. The DOT and each agencies will be able to identify those vehicles upon registration and admin mark them if they are still operating, so that we can remove these vehicles from the road. In terms of the impact of the panel vans, I think we have already spoken to that in terms of what needs to happen. The impact can be limited by DOT by removing those vehicles from the road. Next slide. Enhancing the relationship with the stakeholders, I've already spoken to this. We have an SLA with DOT to clarify our responsibilities as the inspectorate of MIBs. We are aiming to have a meeting with DOT soon to discuss the outstanding vehicles, the 1,986 vehicles that we have referred to earlier on. The SLA also allow us to participate in various forums. One of the forums that we are participating in is the determination of taxi age limit, which is a project that has been initiated and led by Taxi Recapitalization South Africa. We are part of that project in trying to come up with the age limit for taxis that operate for reward. Next slide. In terms of the improvement of the market surveillance activities that NRCS undertake in terms of Section 17, the NLCS has dedicated a team of inspectors to look into the issues of MIBs. The task team's work is continuous. It's not a seasonal thing that will happen now when we have these findings, but it's a continuous work that will be implemented going forward to ensure that the issues pertaining to MIBs are strategically looked into. Part of the work of the task team was to investigate the complaints relating to the products and investigate the alleged non-compliance, the abuse of the inertia system, and overall conduct in-depth audits of all the MIBs and check whether they are illegally converting vehicles. The findings thus far reveal that none of the MIBs are involved in illegal conversion of any vehicles. Next slide. Lastly, Chair, we have embarked on what we call Project Safer Vehicles 2025, which is a project that we have identified to enable us to update all the vehicle regulations. Through our participation in the Working Party 29, which is the United Nations Forum on Vehicle Regulations, we have identified a need to update our regulations so that they can keep abreast with the international norms as well as technological advances, including looking at the issues of self-driven cars, electrical cars, and also generally to enable us to be effective in terms of vehicle regulation enforcement. You remember at some stage we had issues with vehicle fires where we would not be able to do anything due to the limitation imposed by the compulsory specification that we had enforced at the time. Now we want to look at all these vehicle regulations so that we can be able to intervene when it is necessary to do so. I think that will be it on my side. The next slide will deal with the recommendations by the DTIC.
Thank you very much, CEO. Is it Mr. Hannibal who will deal with the recommendations of, by DTIC?
Yes, Chair. Thanks very much, Honourable Chair. So, Chair, we want to propose to the committee that the DTIC and its entities, SABS and NRCS, have fully implemented the Public Protector's remedial action, both in principle and in full practice. Mr. Mamadise and Ms. Scott can talk at length about the improved coordination and cooperation between the two entities. So we think it is important to stress that we believe that we've fully implemented the remedial action required. However, we do want to just point out to the committee that the automotive regulatory system is still a bit fragmented between the national departments of DOT and DTIC. And of course, it's an area that also has national, provincial, and local government competencies. And so that's something that we do need to work towards strengthening. And then, Chair, it would be remiss if we didn't point out that there are still significant numbers of vehicles that were illegally converted from panel vans into taxis. They do continue to operate on our roads, and they do put the lives of many of our people at risk. And we would like to request the Portfolio Committee to perhaps assist in facilitating a meeting with the Department of Transport and its entities to really strengthen the attempts across government to get these illegally and quite dangerous panel vans off our roads as quickly as possible, noting that the mandate, the legal mandate to take vehicles off the road, to inspect vehicles that are already operating on the road, doesn't lie with the DTIC and its entities. But we do think for the sake of the lives of our people, that we need to inject some action into this area. So thank you very much, Chair. I think that's the last slide from the DTIC team and the entities. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. There's the report, committee members. Can I have any questions of clarity or comments that you wish to make? I'll take hands. If there are no hands, then we will assume that we have accepted that report and the recommendations that come with it. There's no further hands. Okay.
There's a hand, Chair.
Yeah. Honourable Burns Namashe.
Thank you very much, Chair. Maybe we just need to highlight the fact that as an established case law, that when findings and remedial actions are made by the Office of the Public Protector, those are binding in every respect. And what it means is that unless they are put on review, they remain findings and actions to be executed in line with what has been directed by the PP. What does this mean? It simply means if there are any reservations or ill feelings about whatever that may have been put as a finding and remedial action by the PP, to the extent that it has not been put on review, it's a matter that I think they call it is trite. There's nothing that we can do about it. Even to suggest feelings that may be to that direction will not be helpful. With that, Chair, the question probably that I would have, I would have two questions. The first one would be, what mutually reinforcing measures have been implemented between SAPS and NRCS, besides the MOU, because we need some practical steps, because here this is all about ensuring safety of the citizens, safety of the commuters, and not only safety, but also acceptable standard in terms of the product itself. So, and of course, it is very clear that to the extent that we have to look into those issues, these may not necessarily be limited to the purview of DTIC. There are other role players, and in this case would be the Department of Transport. So, which means the maximum intensity in terms of in terms of engaging that department becomes key and critical, which probably at some point, Chair, may even necessitate joint portfolio committee meetings, so as to ensure that we have the same appreciation of what needs to be done. Because ultimately, it also, if not done properly, it will obviously have adverse effect in terms of compromising the quality of that which ought to be overseen by the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition through its entities. The second one, has the SABS and NRCS considered rendering conformity assessment services in order to improve the effectiveness of the two entities? Those are the questions I have. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Burns Ngamashe. Can I just check, I don't see Dr. Damana back on the platform. So can I hand over to you? Yes?
He's on the platform, Chair.
Oh, he is. Dr. Damana, can you respond to the questions raised and the comments by Honorable Burns Ngamashe, please? Dr. Damana, I see you are unmuted, but we can't hear you.
I think you still may have the challenge of earlier, Chair.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it could be his device or his network. Mr. Honeywell?
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair, and thanks to Honorable Burns Ngamashe for the two questions. Chairperson, I think the first point that that Honorable Burns Ngamashe made is very helpful. We will certainly reconsider our approach to the public protector's report, because I think he is absolutely right that even if the remedial action is easily implemented, we do need to correct findings that may not have been absolutely correct. And so I think going forward, we would certainly want to be more vigilant in terms of that. So that comment is really helpful. And then, Chair, if I can request my two colleagues, so Ms. Scott and Mr. Mamadise, just to respond to the practical measures that have been implemented in the two institutions, and then maybe Ms. Scholes would also want to respond to the conformity assessment question, as that falls within the purview of SAB. Thanks, Jane.
Thank you very much. Ms. Scholes? Ms. Scholes, are you first? And then we'll go to the CEO. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. Thank you very much, Honourable Burns Ngamashe, for the question. I think SADS has a mandate to look at standards and standards development. That's the heart of our mandate. And one of the policy levers that we have at our disposal is our technical committees. So the NRCS, in terms of identifying some of the gaps in the standard and how the standard should be revised, have already given this information into the relevant technical committee. And so that work is ongoing. So the process is that the technical committee now works with the information that's been given Once they've come up with a consolidated viewpoint, it is then gazetted for a period, and then it then becomes an amended national standard. So that's the process that is currently underway. In terms of the conformity assessment services, yes, SAP has a commercial mandate, and so we do offer conformity assessment services to the market, and this is on a voluntary basis. The NRCS has compulsory specifications, whereas the mandate of SAP is around voluntary compliance. So any company or institution that wants to either look at a product mark, which is our SAP mark, alternatively a management system like ISO 9000, 18,000 or energy management 55,000, those we can also come and assist on a voluntary basis. So companies would then approach us to then do these audits, and we then issue an audit report in that regard. So yeah, I think those were the two questions directed at me. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Scholes, CEO, Mamadise.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. To signify the fact that we do not question the report of the public protector, we have addressed all the findings, and having done so, we submitted the report to the public protector herself in terms of the steps that the NRCS has taken to correct whatever findings that have been contained in the report. So on our side, we consider that we have dealt with all the findings comprehensively, and the PP will advise that as whether she agrees with the actions that we have taken or not. In terms of the practical steps, I think Ms. Scholes has touched on some of the issues that are practical in nature. Over and above the MOU, there are SLAs, like I said, that deals with real operational issues. I think as we speak, we are in the process of finalizing an SLA on testing, which is part of the practical steps that Honorable Benz Ngamashe is talking about. That will talk to the issues of testing, the turnaround times for testing, and the testing capability of all the products that are covered by the NRCS in terms of the compulsory specification. I think that's all I want to make input on. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, CEO and Ms. Scholes, for those responses. I think, committee members, we are now able to complete our report, but I think the challenges thrown out to us by the recommendations from DTIC is how do we assist in getting those 1,900 plus vehicles off the road, because as we speak, they are carrying passengers, and those passengers are South African citizens. So I want to propose to the committee that you allow us to take this to that recommendation to MANCOM, so that we see, do we set up a subcommittee, or do we have a joint portfolio committee meeting, you know, to look at the modality for addressing that recommendation, so that we make sure that as the Department of Trade and Industry, we have done our bit, and then we will come back to the committee then with a recommendation of how we propose to implement that. Can I check if there are any comments from committee members? Honorable Mbiani?
Chairperson, thank you very much. I've seen the letter from the PG writing to the PC. Bullet number, I think, is 2. I'm not so sure the 1.2, because it says as no direct invest finding were made against the department, and given that remedial action constitute a constitutional good practice, the DTIC choose not to challenge the public protector report, although said the report contains a number of misunderstandings between the role and the mandate of SAPS. According to my understanding, Chairperson, if you put this statement, you still don't want to agree with the recommendation or remedial action of the public protector. So I will definitely ask the DG to clarify what is it that is here, because we are no longer talking about the understanding of the public protector in terms of the work of the SAPS and the NRCS. We're talking of the program of action in terms of dealing with the remedial action, because we have failed to review the recommendation by the public protector. Just a clarity, because the 1.2 really confuses me, because now we're agreeing that we're dealing with the MOUs, we're agreeing with the remedial actions, we're developing a program, but such statement, I think it's, to me, it's still we are regretting that while we did not review the remedial action and by the public protector. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mbiani. Is that the DG or Mr. Anival who will respond to that? Acting DG.
Thank you, Chair. I think what we were doing in that letter, we were just trying to contextualize in line with the mandates of the different institutions that were cited in the report. And this has already been said by the chief economist and also acting DDG responsible for the institutions. Our highlighting of this fact, we don't want it to be equated with us not going to take any action in relation to what the public protector has directed that we do. And hence, the different institutions have already indicated the work that we have done thus far. And we are also now saying, because there are some limitations, we are asking the Portfolio Committee for support through a joint portfolio committee with the Department of Transport to see how we comprehensively deal with what is essentially a life-threatening risk to the commuters that continue to use these vehicles. So we've conceded to the point that this matter could have been taken back for review, but our priority is to bring safety, which was really the core of what the complaint at the public protector was. We want to bring safety as soon as possible to these passengers, and hence we are also asking the support of the committee in assisting us and the Department of Transport to see how together we can, based on the current legislative framework, bring improvements, including to this legislative framework, so that these commuters are provided safety as soon as possible. So we had to make a choice whether this was a matter worth us taking on review and spending our time in the court, so to say, with the public protector, or we were going to prioritize the resolution of the core complaint, which is keeping commuters safe. And we chose to keep commuters safe. And any choice that we would have made would have come with a price. The price, Honorable Benz Lamash has already spoken to it. that in a way, when we don't challenge these things, there's that risk that they become, it now is case law, as it were. But the other choice was to delay through taking on review implementation of some of these important measures that the complainants wanted resolved. And we chose to rather take that as our course of action, Chairperson. I hope that just clarifies the issue that we continue to raise it, and hence we are asking support from the portfolio committee so that we strengthen our legislative framework as far as this matter is concerned. But we do acknowledge that there were issues there that were raised, which really did not conform to the legal framework, particularly that the institutions in question are operating under. Thank you, Chair. I hope that clarifies the matter. Thank you.
Thank you, Acting DG. There's the response. Is there any further inputs on this report from members? Thank you. I think that concludes the matter. Honourable Mbiyani, you want to make further input?
No, Chairperson, thanks very much. Maybe I'll be clarified properly outside, because if there are no direct adverse findings made against the department, why now are we developing all these remedial actions? So maybe I'm very much slow, because if there's no direct adverse finding within the SABS and NRCS, we need not to develop all these issues that we're developing, the MOUs, the joint committees. The NRCS has already established some inspectors and all these things, and also the request that we need to have NRCS and the DOT concluded service legal agreement. Because this statement, to me, it's problematic. That means we are just doing this because we have to do it, but we are not part of this thing. So that is why I was asking whether this statement is relevant to the letter, and how are we going to assist as the PC, while at some stage you are still not so sure whether you were wrong or were not wrong, or you were not confirming to the findings and stuff. But I won't delay the PC for my clarity. Maybe I'll get outside this forum. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think the beginning of the presentation by DGIC spoke about, I think we must just go back to that first bullet point. But I think the public, if I remember correctly, the public protector spoke about harmonizing, or I can't remember what the word was, the working relationship between SABS and NRCS. I think that is what these recommendations are about. I think Honorable Burns Ngamashe is going to assist us. Honorable Burns Ngamashe.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I think the issue that is raised by Honorable Mbuyani.
Can I just ask others to please mute? Thank you. Carry on, Honorable Burns.
Yes, is about carefully looking at what probably we can call the doctrine of precedent. You know, because when we deal with the findings and the remedial action by the public protector, we really have to look at that with a high degree of circumspection. Precisely because those findings, when they are made, until they are reviewed by a court of law, they remain a point of reference for future purposes. Yes, I accept the view that says the intention was about being corrective in the interest of commuters, in the interest of citizens. But the challenge about not putting things into proper perspective is that those, if not reviewed, put into proper perspective, then they remain valid instruments which in future will be used as a point of reference to arise at other findings and remedial actions. So that is the issue which I think Honorable Mbuyane is trying to hone into the discourse. So probably if the acting DG could fill that gap, the extent to which it may have those ramifications if not reviewed. Or put it differently, what are the implications of not putting these findings into a review process while on the other hand accepting the remedial action? Thank you very much. I guess I've tried to distill these issues and try to make them as simple and clear as is possible. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think you've assisted even my understanding. Honorable Male Macha?
No, thanks, Chair. In support of Mr. Mbuyane, I want, when the acting DG responds, don't forget what he said yesterday, and I quote, findings you may or not respond simply because they are not directive in nature. I think these are the things that causes a number of confusion, because there's no way that we can find that there seems to be a clear collaboration between the two institutes, not necessarily helping. Therefore, you say I may decide to go and rectify it or not. The man responded. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Can I, yes, Acting DG? You are muted.
Thank you, Chair. I hope you can hear me now.
Okay.
Maybe just to clarify the point. It is not all of the remedial actions that the public protector has directed us to undertake that we are questioning. There is one that indeed is beyond the mandate of the institutions in question to be able to implement. And that is the one which we are most worried about. That one is the one that deals with vehicles that are already on the road. Hence, we are also asking the portfolio committee to assist us with the joint portfolio committee with the Department of Transport. We can go back also including getting legal advice about the implication of just that one finding and us not having challenged it because we are outside the period that is allowed by the law to have challenged it. I have already stated the basis of our decision to move ahead with the implementation of some of the remedial actions that are within the ambit of the two institutions that the DTIC oversees. Let me clarify this, the issue about there were no findings against the DTIC. There's a separation between the DTIC itself, the NRCS, and SAPS. So all of these institutions were asked to do certain actions. So the DTIC, there was nothing that was asked that the department really do. The big matter was about making sure that there is collaboration between our two agencies. We can never question anything of that nature. That collaboration is there. But the big, it's the big finding that has to do with, I would say, the second half of what the complaint was, which deals with the cars that are already on the road. The other half we can deal with. The other half of cars that are on the road is the one that we are saying is beyond our mandate, and hence the important need to then bring the Department of Transport on board to resolve that. So I think, Jim, maybe we have addressed this. I'm not sure if Stephen and even Dr. Dimane may want to add on anything that that I've provided in order to try and assist the committee on this matter. Stephen?
Thanks very much, Chair. Just a quick input from my side. So, honourable members, the core of the issue is, as BG's indicated, the remedial action is being implemented. So we are fully accepting the remedial action and it's being implemented. The point that we were alluding to is that the NRCS doesn't have the legal or regulatory mandate to inspect taxis that are physically on the road already. That mandate resides with the Road Traffic Management Corporation, which is an entity of the Department of Transport, and then of course the security services, the SAPS, the Metro Police, and that's why, honourable members, I alluded at the start of the presentation to this being quite a difficult area, because national, provincial, and local government spheres have a responsibility, a concurrent responsibility. So our main point was simply to say that we need to find a mechanism to work more closely with the entities such as the Road Traffic Management Corporation and our sister national department, the Department of Transport, to get the vehicles, the illegally converted vehicles that are already on the road, to get them off the road. We would argue that we now have in place measures that will avoid a similar situation happening again. Mr. Mamadise spoke to the inspectors, the 100 inspectors that are now dedicated to inspecting the manufacturers, the importers, and the builders who might convert panel vans into taxis. So we think we're addressing the problem at source now, but we have this, in a sense, legacy challenge, which is the 1,900 odd illegally converted vehicles that are currently on the road. And those we simply don't have the legal mandate to be able to get them off the road. We need a partnership with our colleagues in the Department of Transport, and they will need their entities such as the RTMC and others at provincial and local government level to actually go out, stop taxis alongside the road, check if they fall into the category of the 1,900 illegally converted, and actually get them off the road once and for all. So thanks, Jane.
Thank you very much. Committee members, are you comfortable to move on with the agenda? Are there any further questions?
No, thanks, Chair. We're covered.
Okay, thank you. I don't see any other hands. So we go to the next agenda item, which is the consideration of the first draft report on the second and third quarter financial and non-financial performance of the DTIC. Honourable Acting, Acting DG. You're muted, I think. Acting DG. You're still muted. Maybe it's a network issue because we can't hear you, but you're okay. I just heard this and then it went off. Try again. Have we lost DG now?
Sure.
Yes. The sermon.
Chair, I don't know if the GD wanted to conclude the presentation or before they leave, Chair, because the next item is committee report.
Oh, it's the committee looking at the first draft and not the DG.
No, it's not the DG. It's for us.
Yes, okay. Did you want to make any concluding remarks on the...
No, Chair. I thought my system left before me, so
okay.
So that's it. But just to thank the members for their input, and once again to just humbly request that support from the portfolio committee with regards to a joint sitting with the Department of Transport to try and resolve this matter. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DG. And the team. Mr. Hemmings, can we then deal with the first draft of the second and third quarter report? Yes.
We'll proceed, Chair. We'll just ask Margaret to flag the report, Chair, and we can then speak to the report, Chair, that has been prepared as a result of that engagement we had.
Okay.
In February.
Yeah.
Chair,
our electricity, I'm on load shedding, so I'm hoping to remain on the platform, but I'm just giving you a heads up. Thank you. Over to you.
Chair, we have submitted this report to members, I think, on Friday, and we also requested that members submit concluding remarks and recommendations for consideration. We only received concluding remarks from the African National Congress and the African Christian Democratic Party, the ACDP, who submitted concluding remarks, which we have distributed to members this morning, Chair. Chair, Margo will take us through the report quickly, Chair, and then we'll look at the concluding remarks submitted by the two parties for input and deliberation, Chair. Thanks.
Ms. Schauder.
Good morning, members. So the reports on the DTIC second and third quarter financial and non-financial performance for the 2021-2022 financial year. So it covers 1st July to 31st of December 2021. We are yet to propose an introduction. So the first part of the report just gives the strategic goals of the department. It then looks at an overview and assessment of the financial and non-financial performance. In terms of non-financial performance for the second quarter, there was a 85% achievement of targets during the quarter. So that was six of the 14 activity that were not met. We then list what the six are. We then go to the third quarter performance, and in this case we had a 77% achievement with I think 8 of the 35 targets not being met. And these are listed here and the reasons for them mostly. The next part of the report covers the financial performance for the second quarter performance, and the third quarter. So we split it into by program and by economic classification. So the first part, the department has spent 6.1 billion of its 6.3 billion budget by the end of September. We then look at by program. And we just highlight which programs have been underspending, where there's significant underspending. And then by economic classification as well. Then similarly for the third quarter, we had 8.5 million of the 8.8 million. So spending has been fairly done well, and we break it up by program and by economic classification again. And then in terms of issues raised during the deliberations, the following matters were highlighted. So we looked at the industrial financing targets in relation to investment leverage, and the lack of uptake of the film and TV incentive program. This is specifically in relation to the South African local themes or stories. And then support the enterprises under the Workplace Challenge Program. SEZs as a vehicle for job creation. Infrastructure to enable well-functioning rural SEZs. The benefits of the AFC to the African Continental Free Trade Agreement in relation to other trading partners. And then there was a focus on mergers and the risk of over-concentration with specific examples related to the farming sector versus access for smaller farmers. And on retail pharmacy, the retail pharmacy sector. Then there was an area of concern related to the appropriateness of the DTSC's key performance indicators and of targets. And delays in it was focused on the reasons for delays in finalizing the review of the entity's governance framework. And then finally, I think this is the last one, challenges faced by the BBB Commission as a trading entity. One more, and the impact of underspending on transfers and subsidies on the economy. Then I'll hand over to Mr. Hermans again.
I'm muted, Chair. If we may proceed, Chair, then that is the body of the report which we should distribute it since Friday. And if members wish to make propose any changes. If we move forward, Chair, we ask members to submit concluding remarks and recommendations for the committee to consider. If we can cite those remarks, Chair, if you're okay with that?
Yes, you may proceed.
Okay. We will proceed with the, Margot will share the ANC's comments, concluding remarks for consideration, Chair, and we'll take the committee through that. I don't know if I'm going to do it point by point before we proceed, Chair. And then for comment before we proceed to the next point, Chair.
Yes, let's take comments on each point, yeah.
Okay. Chair, the submission from the ANC in terms of the concluding remarks is the following. The committee noted that although there has been an 85% achievement with six targets that details I did not meet, and as a result, such a decline is significant. The committees have the view that all directorates concerned should work on the respective mandates to achieve maximum success. That's the first conclude the remark proposed by the African National Congress for comment, Chair.
Okay, let me just see. I don't see any hands. Is there any other input? I think let's move on. It seems like that is accepted.
Chair, the second point is the committee is concerned about the lack of uptake of the film and TV incentive program in terms of core and increased support for local content. It has observed that there is a need for funding for local content in the sector. The committee noted that it's important to raise awareness among both screenwriters and producers that funding for local content, in particular South African stories, is available and encourage the DTRC to continue its efforts in this regard.
Thank you. So I see Mr. Mamadisi, the CEO's mic is on. I don't know if he wanted to make an input. I see he's still on the platform. I see there's no hands, so let's move on to 4.3.
The committee was of the view that SEZs are important to stimulate the economy and to create jobs, particularly for the surrounding areas' communities. Therefore, the investment in infrastructure and top structure supporting these SEZs is imperative. Much support and focus should be targeted at SEZs in rural and underdeveloped provinces to assist them to attract investments through the implementation of the district development model. Chair, just to with regard to 4.3, Chair, there's the ACDP also submitted a comment, and we combine the two, Chair. May I propose that we see how we combine this 4.3 with the ACD before we conclude on, Chair?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, cool. Then we'll go to 4.4, Chair. The ACDB will speak to that, Chair. 4.4, the committee urged the DTIC to accelerate the revitalization of industrial parks and to ensure that this infrastructure investment is secured, to ensure that they can facilitate entrepreneurial and employment opportunities in rural areas. In the view of the committee, this should significantly contribute to industrialization and localization imperatives.
Is it this one that the ACDP has?
No, it's the 4.3 one. When we deal with the ACDP, we combine it in there, Chair, so it's us to deal with it there.
Okay.
No, Chair, I think I'm happy with what I'm hearing so far. So in terms of the inputs of the ACDP, I don't have any problems with what I'm hearing. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much, Honourable Queen.
4.5, Chair, if I may, the committee noted with concern the continued underspending in the industrial financing program. It encouraged the DTIC to find mechanisms to reduce the time lag between the approval and disbursement of funds, such as providing non-financial support to beneficiaries to meet their disbursement requirements.
Any takers? No? Okay, 4.6.
4.6. So the committee was concerned about the financial sustainability of black industrialists and implored the DTIC to ensure that non-financial support was provided to ensure the longevity of these companies. Similarly, as mentioned above, the black industrial scheme is notably not attracting a lot of rural-based black industrialists, and there's a need to mitigate such a gap.
Any further inputs? No. 4.7.
Chair, I'll propose that we also, when we deal with the ACDPs, there's a combination of the two submissions, so we deal with 4.7 with the ACDPs one, so we can move to 4.8, Chair.
4.8?
The committee emphasized that while mergers may not be prevented, there's a need for the DTIC and the Competition Commission to ensure that mergers are effectively regulated to prevent over-concentration in the market. Excessive competition may negatively impact on consumers and create barriers to trade for smaller competitors or suppliers.
I don't see any input.
Still happy, Chair. Thank you.
Okay, that's great.
Although the committee welcomed 9 chair, if I may proceed, although the committee welcomed several master plans had been signed and agreed to, it was of the view that it would be equally important to focus on implementation thereof and raise awareness of the relevance in the growing the economy and creating jobs.
Any further input from committee members? No. 4.10.
While the committee acknowledges the administrative and other support offered by the DTRC to the BBBW Commission, it remains concerned that the Commission is a trading entity rather than an independent entity. It is of the view that this classification inhibits the Commission's powers and access to financial and human resources, hence its ability to execute its mandate.
Thank you. There we have 4.10 about the BBBE Commission. Any further inputs? No. Is that the last one?
That's the last point, Chief, if you may proceed. If there's no input, if you may proceed to the ACDP's input, Chief.
Thank you.
Chair, with regard to the point 4.1, Chair, I'll move to 4.2 in this regard and go back as to the last one, because the ACDP submitted recommendations, but we have the view that the majority is rather concluding remarks, Chair, and we propose that is captured as followed in blue. You will see the ACDP's point is captured in black, Chair, and we propose that it is a concluding remark and is captured in blue. If I may read the blue, Chair. Given the importance of industrialization to develop and grow the economy, the committee urged DTRC, in conjunction with relevant government departments and entities, to continue to address structural reforms needed to drive both foreign and local investment change.
Any objection to that being taken into the conclusions? I think that's fine. You want to speak to it, Honourable Sirin?
No, Chair. The committee is happy.
Okay.
I'm fine, Chair.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, you can move on.
If you can go down, Margo. Chair, this is one where we combine the view of the point 3 of the ANC with the ACD point. The way we combine it is the committee was of the view that this is important to stimulate the economy by creating economies of scale, that's the addition of the ACDP, and to create jobs particularly. And then the next item, the committee emphasized that a seamless intergovernmental approach across the 3 CFA government was critical to ensure the success of the SED program. We combine what Mr. Kling has proposed to the 4.3, and we want the committee is happy with that merge.
Can I just hear committee members? I think it speaks to the district development model, just in other words, but
yes.
The sentiment is the same.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any other input, so I think we are in agreement.
I'm happy with the hybrid approach, Chair. Thank you.
Okay, I see there's a hand from Honourable Burns Ngamashe.
No, thank you very much. At least I'm happy Ms. Yako is agreeable to all these proposals.
Just remember, she said she might be load shedding. So, yeah, is she still on the platform?
I'm not sure, Chair.
Anyway, this is the first draft.
Yeah. Chair, with this the 4.4, we also made the following amendments for consideration. The committee noted the extensive work done by the DTIC and a CU partners in preparing for the finalization and implementation of the African Free Continental Free Trade Agreement. It further noted that the need for effective implementation of the industrialization and regional economic integration programs, which will directly benefit inter-Africa trade and regional development. But this is also a combination combined with the proposal from the ANC 4.7 chair.
Any takers on that, any inputs? But I think it enhances that conclusion. It doesn't take away from it. There's no further answer. Yes.
4.5, Chair? 4.5?
Yeah, proceed.
Okay. Mr. Fink submitted this concluding remarks. There's no reference in the body of the report, so we're proposing that should not be part of concluding remarks.
So what are we saying about it?
There's no reference on beneficiation in the body of the report, Chair. So
beneficiation.
But there's no substance in the body of the report, so. So hence we're saying it should not be.
It fall off here.
Yeah, fall off, Chair. Then we go back to 4.1, Chair. The recommendation.
Chair.
Chair,
I don't know whether that should fall off, even though there may not necessarily be any reference to beneficiation. But I do think that beneficiation is actually a key component of government to drive employment, reduce unemployment, create jobs. The whole, if one looks at the report, I think the report essentially is looking at what is it that the committee can do for industrialization, to improve industrialization, to improve job creations, our SEZs and our industrial parks. And to a large extent, I think that beneficiation is a part of that. You know, your industrial parks, if we are able to get the policy of beneficiation correct and ramp it up, we would then be seeing our industrial parks and our SEZs, springing up because of the huge raw mineral deposits that South Africa actually has that we are exporting and creating jobs outside of South Africa instead of in South Africa. And so I would disagree that that particular point should be dropped, Chair.
Can I just check with the secretary and the team, the secretariat team on the platform, if we can include something that's not in the body of the report and where should it be? It can't be under conclusions because it's a conclusion of a report, and if it's not in the report, is there any way it can be captured? Can we be advised?
The practice normally would be if there's no reference to any to such a I understand what Mr. Ping is saying, but if there's no reference, we in the body it shouldn't be concluding mark unless we create some the issues that Mr. Ping may have raised in the body of the report as such, because he may not explicitly raise it during the engagement. But this is an ongoing report, and I think we would be should be fine if we want to create a narrative around the matter raised by Mr. Kring.
Into the body of the report.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, can I take the hands of Honorable Mbiyani and then Honorable Burns Mamashe? Honorable Mbiyani?
Chairperson, thanks very much. I don't know if you can go back to 4.1 of the ANC proposal or the input in terms of the concluding remarks, because here I only see that beneficiation, you cannot separate beneficiation from localization. If we will agree with the Mr. Tring's point is that in terms of the SEZ, I don't know, it's 4.2. It's 4.2.
4.3.
Yes, 4.3. On this one, we're agreeing it's fine in terms of the development model. But there's localization that we mentioned, I think it's 4.2. Yeah.
Going
yeah,
in the wrong direction. Oh, there it is, yeah.
It's 4.4, yeah. So if
no.
A significant contribution to industrialization, beneficiation and localization imperative,
okay.
I think that
yeah.
is where we can be able to put his view, because you cannot separate the localization with beneficiation, because what you want to localize in terms of the content,
yes.
you want the local people to beneficiate.
Yeah.
That is what you can put it there. Thank you very much.
Jay, then we will just make sure that the difference in the body is also captured in
yes.
in the essence.
Yes,
as,
that's
yeah.
what I've captured, yeah. Have you concluded on the ACDP input? Okay, we're going
back. No. No, not yet, Jay. There's one
okay,
point.
Okay, because... No, there's still Honorable Burns Mamashi saying...
No, thank you very much, Chair. I think partly I'm also covered, save to say that the issue of beneficiation is not only about South Africa, but it is also about the region and the continent, especially in the context of the African Continental Free Trade framework, precisely because Africa as a continent is endowed with a lot of natural resources, which are exported as raw material. And by exporting those raw materials, as Honorable Tring was saying, you are actually exporting job opportunities. So the beneficiation thus is about creating conscious and deliberate value chains so as to ensure that by the time we export finished product. Because that's what would create the competitive edge with global players within the economic the program. So this is very, very it would have been a fatal omission not to include beneficiation as part of either our concluding remarks or any part of the report. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. I think we can move on. Yeah.
We have noted the comments by the members, Chair, and we will make sure that there is reference in the body in terms of linking
yeah.
it to the localization drive, Chair.
Yeah.
The last
and I think also, Andre, if you can then also add, because I think Honorable Burns Namashi's input around the, besides local.
Yeah, no, the digital.
Yeah.
Note that, Chair.
Okay.
Then the last item that we would bring, that we concur with Mr. Tring, that it is a recommendation, and we just phrase it differently, that the minister should consider developing an incentive to support the establishment of film studios in other provinces. Chair.
Okay. Honorable Burns, is your hand up to discuss the film studio in the Eastern Cape, in Butterworth in particular. Honorable Burns, okay, see to defense and down. Members, what are we saying about including this, the establishment of film studios in other provinces, although
I suppose he's speaking about incentive. Honourable Singh is speaking about incentive. So it's creating the market. Honourable Burns, Honourable Mbuyani.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think this point is covered, just as with an emphasis on this one that it must be established in progress.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's covered on the point. I don't know if you can recall, Andre, that we must support and be able to deal with film, local film. And those local film, we're thinking they are situated in all the provinces that you're talking about. Just check the point.
Yeah, let's just check whether we actually say in other provinces, because I think that is the particular point that is being made here.
That is the point that is made. We make reference to the local stories and in the body of the document and including remarks. But what Mr. Thing, and he can speak for it, is proposing that I think there's currently only the film studio in Western Cape, and he's proposing that incentives is created to establish film studios outside of Cape, of the Western Cape, in other provinces.
Okay, if I may.
Okay, there's Honourable Burns' hand, and then I'll take Honourable McPherson.
Mr. Thring.
Sorry, I was at Mr. Thring. Okay, let me hear you because it's your input. Honourable Burns.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, if I may, I think when one reads the report, clearly I think that there was a call for, you know, local stories, African stories. And one of the reasons why the call for that was not taken up was that within the film studio in Cape Town, it appears as if the focus is more kind of a Hollywood and possibly, you know, focus more on a European, a Eurocentric or other approach, and not necessarily an African approach or local story approach. And so if that's going to be the focus, for example, of the Cape Town Film Studio, then certainly incentives need to be given to other provinces if that's what the Cape Film Studio wishes to do, that's fine. That's their prerogative. But I think if we are then able to branch out and incentivize other provinces, and I know that we had something going here in Etiquini when I was still in local government. I'm not sure what the status of the few studios. There were one or two studios that we had, one at the harbor and one close to KwaMashu, the KwaMashu Newlands East area. But if we are able to incentivize those particular film studios in other provinces, like what was happening in KZN, for example, I think then we would be in a position where certainly the story, the African stories, can and must be heard. So I think that was my thinking when I put that particular recommendation in. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Thring. Honourable Burns, Namashe.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. I think you made mention something about Butterworth. Now I was just going through. I think I missed that.
No. I was just saying we're talking about other provinces. So I saw your hand up and I said, no, you are going to speak about the Eastern Cape studio and it must be in Butterworth.
No. Anything and everything, Chair, that will assist the people of Butterworth, I'll be happy.
Yes, I know that. Okay, so are we going to find a way to capture it then, Andre?
Chair, if the body is, we capture in the body of the matter, the recommendation is about the incentive of the committee is in agreement with that, then we will keep it in the opinion, Chair.
Yeah, okay.
And then,
Chair, consider the message
to members to, like the practice would be that the members will take we will include this in the body of the report, Chair, and the members can take it to their respective parties,
yes.
And then we can conclude that we can adopt it at our next meeting. I think it's next week, Chair, where we'll formally adopt the report after parties had opportunity to give input to the report, Chair, at the respective caucuses.
Okay, thank you.
Does that conclude the first draft?
That conclude the first draft, Chair. We will do the necessary and distribute the full report to members. Chair, Mr. Mbuyane, raise his hand.
Honourable Mbuyane.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Just for information's sake, I don't know, other parties are not partaking or they have not submitted. Or when are they going to submit? Because really now we are dealing with issues of the PC. And at some stage, if we approve and we agree with the report, people will start now to disagree and all of a sudden. But now we've given an opportunity to go to our various study groups and come up with something that we need to be part of the report. I was just checking whether they don't want to submit or they want to abstain themselves from voting in this report. Thank you.
I don't see anybody who is raising their hands to respond. So we take it that the submissions we have received is the submissions that there are at this point in time. But I think we note your comment. There's a message from Honorable String that he has to leave our meeting. We know that he covers many bases. We've concluded this agenda item?
That's correct, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. We're making good time. Can we go to the next agenda item, which is the presentation on the draft oversight concept document? Thank you, Mr. Hermans.
Chair, I'm just asking Margaret to fight it and Margaret and Sekwanda. Larry was responsible for putting the document together, Chair, in consultation with other secretariat members. And this document was developed as a request from the chairperson so that when we do oversight, there is a structured approach to this matter. Chair, just to highlight that when the concept paper was developed, we looked at the provinces that the previous parliament and this committee has undertaken. So the proposal is in line to ensure that the committee does not only visit certain provinces, but broaden its scope and ensure that all provinces are visited during this process. So we'll hand over to Margot, Chair, just to take us through the concept paper, Chair, and we will then... Members will then engage and give their input to this chair. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sheldon. I'm leaving my camera off because it's load shedding, so it's a bit dark in the room. Thank you.
Okay. So the concept paper provides a basic introduction of
Margot, your sound, I think the load shedding is dealing with everyone. Ms. Sheldon, we can't hear you.
Chair, it may appear that Margot would have the same problem as Dr.
Yeah.
Dumona has. So I don't know if Sekwanda wants to take him through or shall I proceed, Sekwanda?
Hi, Mr. Hermans. You can continue. I'll add where necessary.
Okay.
Thank you.
Chair, then I'll proceed until Margaret is connected again. Okay.
Now you've lost Margaret completely.
Let me just get the dot, Chair, and see if I can share the dot.
Okay. Thank you.
Chair, you can see the document, Chair?
Yes, we can.
Okay, Chair. Just to give the introduction, it's just the foundation for the oversight principle as Parliament's legislative arm of government. responsible for passing legislation, overseeing executive action, and facilitating public participation. It fulfills its mandates partially through the effective functions of its committee. Chair, then the portfolio committee's focus is on legislation pertaining to and execution of the mandate of the Minister of Trade, Industry and Competition. In this regard, the committee engages on and considers new amendment legislation falling within its mandate, but oversees the implementation of settled legislation as well as the relevant department policies and programs. Oversight visits can take several forms. Oversight can take several forms. It's committee meetings, workshops, colloquiums, physical oversight, and oversight typically does could cover briefings by the department, entities, engagements with the relevant stakeholders on the impact of the implication of implementation of government policy or legislation, or site visits of projects supported by the department or its entities. One of the key focus areas of the department is the facilitation of industrialization and expansion of the manufactured base to ensure economic development, transformation opportunities, and job creation. Therefore, the bulk of the DTIC budget is spent on transfers to enterprises as part of its incentive programs, as well as on decentralizing economic activities through the establishment of special economic zones and the revitalization of industrial parks. In addition, one of the critical programs have been developed is the development of master plans in partnership with business and labor and government in several sectors. And the DTA has concluded a number of master plans as captured from point one to point eight. In addition, the DTIC plays a role at domestic border posts in terms of trade facilitation to ease the flow of trade and reduce non-tariff barriers. In this regard, the functioning of Indian borders between South Africa and neighboring African countries is critical as part of the regional economic integration agenda. Furthermore, the National Regulator for Compulsory Specification announced to monitor compliance of products entering the country that are subject to compulsory specification and enforces the requisite compulsory specification. It is thus proposed that these element focus areas be incorporated during the next oversight visit. Furthermore, the committee has been undertaking regular follow-up meetings with the NRC and SAPS, and given the slow progress, it has proposed to conduct a follow-up visit to two entities for an in-depth engagement of the challenges in resolving the NRC's audit findings in relation to the estimation of levy revenues and its financial situation, as well as that of SAPS. Possible provinces and activities. Over the past three parliaments, the committee has visited the Eastern Cape, Natal and the Western Cape province on numerous occasions. Therefore, a shift to the northern provinces, namely Limpopo and Mpumalanga province, is being proposed. The following focus areas and possible sites has been identified, and it aligns with the focus areas with respect to master plans in Limpopo, forestry, furniture and poultry, and in Mpumalanga forest, the focus is on forestry, furniture, poultry and sugar. With respect to SEZ, it's the Messina Mercado SEZ in Limpopo, and in Mpumalanga it's in Nkomazi SEZ. With respect to industrial parks, it's the Sheikhot Industrial Park and the Nkomwankowa Industrial Park in Limpopo, and the Ikandustria in Mpumalanga. With regard to the Black Industrialist Program, in the Popo, these entities industrialists will identify the Eastern Trading, Hollow Black Invest, CABS, Precast Concrete, ZK Rooftop Manufacturers, 210 Hotel, Amazon Hotel, Miami Lodge. In Mpumalanga is Nkomazi Cotton Development Project, Balisu Holdings, the FX Group, Mthule Mining Projects, Leopard Sands, Haskop Borge Lift Company. That's from part of the industrial programs in these two provinces. With regard to the incentive scheme for approvals, in Limpopo, the agro-processing, Vembe DM received 13.9 million. Aquaculture, the crop garden in Mogopong, approval of 2.97 million. In Mpumalanga agro-processing, Ilanzeni DM 1.2 million. CFP in that area also received a number of couple of millions, and the EMI 50,000. These are the two provinces that we propose, and there's also in Limpopo the EIM also received money. Then there's the border post, is paid preach in Limpopo and Lebombo in Mpumalanga. The proposed time frames that the Secretariat proposed is the second quarter, is the 19th to the 22nd of April, but it means we will depart on the 18th, in the evening of the 18th. And the first province is Mpumalanga and Gauteng to combine the NRCS and SAMS. And then in the third quarter, which 16 and 19 to be confirmed still in terms of parliamentary program would be Limpopo. Then we also look at a possible study tour, and just to, as a rider, just for members to be informed that the moratorium on international travel is still in place. It's not, has not even been lifted by the speaker, but notwithstanding that, we looked at a possible study tour for the committee. And normally our study or regional visits are typically to learn how other countries implement certain policies, in particular when the committee is considering legislation or address certain challenges, as well as the attendance of relevant international conferences. However, in certain instances, such visits could offer oversight opportunities, as the department's mandate has an international element in terms of promoting foreign direct investment flows into South Africa, but also into the African continent, as well as the promotion of South African exports. Furthermore, these visits can offer opportunities to learn more about how other countries implement specific policy to influence the development of domestic policies. The focus areas that we have identified for consideration to one or more African countries are, as proposed, is trade facilitation, which is a critical area, especially among African countries, as non-tariff barriers are often used to protect a country's domestic industry, or can inadvertently inhibit the volume of readmission claim. This can cover a wide variety of issues, from harmonization of standards of products and regulation affecting specific, especially transportation and distribution of products, to cooperation among African countries at their borders. Factors that can influence trade facilitation are the trade and service agenda, the ease of doing business within countries, and the implementation of the African Continental Free Trade Agreement and the Southern African Development Community SADC Free Trade Agreement. Project supported by the Export Credit Insurance Company of South Africa and the IDC should also be part of the focus areas when we do travel into Africa. Activities at foreign economic offices in relation to trade, investment, promotion and facilitation is another focus. And industrialization policy and the implementation of special economic zones. Currently, there is a renewed focus on SEZ and industrial development in a number of African countries. This is particularly within sectors such as the automotive sector, agro-processing, and possible mineral beneficiation. With the advent of the African Continental Free Trade Agreement, it is expected that other countries would become more lucrative for foreign direct investments to access the benefits of the new market. Therefore, the competition to attract new investment within the continent would increase over time. Alternatively, the committee could focus on industrial policy development and implementation, and visit a more developed economy that has implemented sectoral industrial policy effectively. This also could include oversight visits on the activities of the FEO in relation to trade and investment promotion or facilitation. Possible countries and activities that we have identified, African countries and areas of interest have been identified, and we highlight where the where there's IDC projects, where there's EIC support, where there's SEZs, and where there's FEOs operating in the countries. And the country that has all four of these things is Ghana. Possible developing countries for industrial policy is Germany, Japan, and South Korea. For the committee's consideration. At the bottom, we have put an annex of where we visited since 2009, but that is for members reading. So that is the draft proposal for oversight visit for the committee's input and consideration. So that's it, Chair. That's where I leave it.
Oh, you're working hard for your bread and butter today.
I see so, Chair.
Content advisor, researcher, everything, and secretary. Members, there is the concept, oversight concept document. Can I take inputs from the committee? I see Honourable McPherson.
Thanks, Chair. A lot of hard work gone into this by Andre. I really want to try and suggest that, you know, particularly to the latter part of the document, it's very, very broad and wide-ranging. And there's a lot to cover, and there's only so much that we're going to be able to cover in the next 2 years. I have my particular thoughts on what that should be, and I'm sure other members do. But I think in order to get a more narrow focus that the committee sort of feels is more representative of what it wants to achieve, maybe, and just for thought, a very small and short subcommittee could be formed to try and flesh out exactly what those priorities might be. Because knowing Parliament and the way that they work, and many of us have been for around some time, that I think that we're only going to get one shot at something like that. As much as we would like to try and cover some of the broad focuses and go here, there, and everywhere, I think that with you know, the way that Parliament finds itself in, I think that we're going to have to be quite defined in how we approach this. So we may want to take a committee strategic view on this particular point. So that's just something for consideration. Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable McPherson. Honourable Mbiyami.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Let me first welcome the concept document. A lot of work there. And also appreciate that we've been quite long in this committee, but this work is very important because it talks to our core mandate of oversight, going there on the ground, seeing exactly what is happening, more especially on the SEZs, because the two SEZs that we identified, they were still not breaking the ground, more especially the Nkomazi and the Musina. So it will be very much important as a committee to go there and check what is happening. Also on the industrial parks and also the black industrialists that the department has related to us to say they've spent put a lot of effort and a lot of money there. So it will be proper for us to go there and see on ourselves as part of our mandate. Mandated by our people to come and represent them in Parliament, Chairperson. Thank you very much. Let's welcome the presentation by the Secretariat. It's a lot of work there, and us, it's our core mandate as well. As much as we're looking in terms of the legislative mandate, but this is very key so that it checks what the department has done in terms of the finance and all those stuff. Thank you very much for the opportunity, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. So it seems as if we are in agreement with and we're adopting this concept document on our oversight work. Can I recommend that we take the Honourable McPherson's suggestions to Manco?
the one for making forming a small and, as you said, short subcommittee of this portfolio committee to look into a very narrow focus, because we will only get one shot at these things and we need to get it right. So I think that is my proposal on taking this matter forward. And in any case, I don't think we can, because of the moratorium on international travel, we can't submit any requests as yet. So it gives us time to do some work around narrowing the focus. Mr. Hermans, am I correct? We can't submit any applications yet.
Chair, because the moratorium is still in operation, Chair, so it does not make sense. It's cut a lot of work that goes into something that may not be approved, Chair.
Thank you very much. And that brings us to the end of our program. Thank you very much, honourable members, for your inputs. We've dealt with quite substantive issues. I just want to ask us that we also take to Mancom the issue of the our first agenda items, looking at a joint committee meeting or a joint subcommittee of the two of DTIC and DOT in terms of the outstanding issue of the unauthorized converted Toyota Quantums that's on the road. So we will discuss this in our next Mancom meeting, and then in our next portfolio committee we'll bring you some recommendations, members. But thank you very much. We've concluded our meeting. Thank you for your participation.
Long live the chair. Long live the chair. Long live the chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Control this button.